Watching the trees change color is one of the chief pleasures of fall, but many of us want fall color in our yards and gardens, too. Today, we'll get some innovative ideas. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. And when we think of fall color in the garden, mums and asters spring to mind. But Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock has put together a list of 20 perennials that have beautiful color in October. I'll talk with him, and horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will also be here. He and Denny will answer your questions about the plants in your life. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. And in addition to enjoying a landscape full of beautiful fall color on our trees, a lot of us love to have vibrant colors in our yards and gardens, too. And fortunately, Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock is full of good ideas for how to do that. And he is with us today. Hello, Denny.
Good morning, Charity. Great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I know a lot of us, when we think about fall color in the garden, just immediately we think about mums and asters, but you want to go farther, right?
That's right. I'm not trying to put down mums and asters, but I think people ought to be looking beyond the mums and asters and do a little diversification in the landscape. It helps the pollinators to have more different types of things. And frankly, I'm tired of them. I want something different. I'm a plant geek, so I love lots of different things.
All right. So you actually sat down and you put together a list of 20 different perennials that bloom in October. Was that difficult?
Actually, it was not difficult at all. I just took a walk around my yard and said, okay, what's blooming now? Yeah, these must be good now in October.
You must really have made an effort, though, to make sure that you have blooms that go this late in the season.
Well, I do make a point of making sure that I have a large variety of things in my yard. I mean, I have thousands of different types of plants there, and just sort of by default, it happens. But, yes, I do put a little bit of thought behind it to make sure that when the first frost comes in, often in September or early October, I still have color that's going to carry on, usually into November.
Well, we are going to publish this entire list on our website, iowapublicradio.org, after the show is over today. So we don't need to get to every single one on the list today. But tell me about some of your favorites. What are some of the things that are really beautiful this time of year?
Well, one that's really at its peak right now are the Japanese toad lilies, Tricertis hirta. And that's a great one for people that have a bit of shade. They do well in part shade, not really deep, deep shade, but part shade is good. They'll do okay in full sun, too. But to me, they look like little orchids on arching stems. So they're kind of whitish with purple dots all over them. So they're really a great thing right now.
And if you have these in your garden, what do they look like the rest of the summer?
The rest of the year, they're sort of the plain background type of plant. They have those arching stems with leaves coming off, so they're not spectacular to look at, but you plant things like hostas around them that you may have colorful foliage throughout the summer, and by now the hostas are starting to look a little tattered and worn, and so now they can really sparkle and shine and take the emphasis away from those that are kind of beyond their prime.
All right. And they're really striking flowers.
They are. They definitely are.
All right. Well, let's pick another one on your list. What else is beautiful this time of year?
Well, I might pick one that very few people probably know about, and I think we ought to grow more, and that is the Zauschneria, or the California fuchsia. You might think with a name, common name like that, it wouldn't grow here in Iowa, but it is hardy to zone 5. So all but perhaps the northeast and northwest corner of Iowa, you should be able to grow it. It needs lots of heat through the summer, as you might guess, with the California-Arizona name. But when it comes to October, it starts putting out these bright orange-red trumpet-shaped flowers. And, of course, if you still have some hummingbirds around, those hummingbirds will love that California fuchsia.
Awesome. Well, and when you were talking about the toad lily, those are kind of some colors that we're not used to seeing this time of year. This California fuchsia, and those are really strong fallish colors.
That's
orange red.
That's right. And so if you're into that, the fall colors, another great one that I would suggest would be the blanket flower, Gillardia. It blooms really pretty much all season long. And even if the seed heads are left on, it's attractive with just sort of ball-like seed heads. But if you deadhead a little bit, they're going to have flowers well past frost as well.
Oh, wow. And they're, I think they're beautiful cyclone flowers.
They are. They're red and, red and gold.
So if that's your team allegiance, you can celebrate that in the garden as well. What else is on your list?
Well, another one I probably should mention is the catmints, the Nepeta fascinii. I mentioned that one because that one's definitely a 3 to almost 4 season plant. It starts blooming pretty early in the season. You may have to trim it back occasionally through the summer, but it keeps pushing blooms out well past frost with the silvery gray foliage and nice purpley blue flowers.
All right, and say the name of that one again.
That's Nepeta. The common name is cat mint, not cat nip. A lot of people get confused with cat nip, but this is cat mint.
All right, a very, very different plant, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, and in coming up with these plants, obviously, Denny, you have dedicated your life to gardening and looking at unusual plants. People are going to look for your list and they're going to learn from that. But where else can you get ideas for flowers that bloom this late in the season? Are there places that you can go that are broken down by blooming dates?
There certainly are some resources that indicate what the bloom season of perennial flowers are. You can go to a lot of online sources that have, you know, just Google bloom dates for perennials, and you often will find a chart that way. Another good thing to do is just to actually go visit public gardens that have a lot of perennials.
Or so, your yard.
Or my yard, yes. So, you know, just kind of see, oh, yeah, that looks great. What I plant in my yard.
Let's talk about a couple others on this list, and then I want to turn to your list of you also put together some perennials that have just beautiful fall foliage as well. So let's talk about a couple other bloomers, and then we'll move on to some of the others.
Okay, another one that I really like that doesn't have the typical fall color would be the Centranthus rubra, red valerian, or Jupiter's beard. That's another one that has really, really long season of bloom. May want to deadhead a little bit to keep it blooming, because if it sets seed, it tends to slow down its flowering. But it usually is blooming its heart away until we have really hard freezes. And that's the thing about these are perennial flowers. So even though we may get a frost any day now, it doesn't look like it's real imminent, but oftentimes by this time of year, we might have frost.
Right.
And so your annual flowers are going to disappear. But because these are perennials, they'll take temperatures down into the upper 20s and still keep on blooming.
All right. And if these are another beautiful red flower. It was interesting looking at pictures of the catmint. It doesn't seem like the right time of year to see a lavender. Are there any others on your list that have colors that we just don't expect to see in October?
Well, yeah, there's probably the one I might mention is the platycodon or balloon flower. The one I particularly like is called Sentimental Blue. It's a little dwarf one. The main species of platycodon gets to be 3 or 4 feet tall and can be a little floppy. But Sentimental Blue is a dwarf one that doesn't get more than about 15 inches tall. Blooms really fully through the early summer period, deadhead it, comes back, and this time of year it's still blooming, and it's starting to show its fall color. You might, if you look at the fall foliage color list, it's on that list as well. So not only do you get the blue flowers, you get this kind of golden glow behind the blue with maroon overtones. So really stunning combination.
And these are called balloon flowers. Do they close up every day and create a balloon shape, or is that something that's just in the blooming process?
You know, that's in the blooming process.
Okay.
The buds are balloon shape. And a fun thing, if you've got kids or grandkids, when they're still in the bud shape, you can pop the buds and they make a nice popping sound.
And then do they bloom from there, or are they done?
And then they bloom right after
okay.
That, yes.
Very cool. All right. Well, I think we better talk about some of the ones that you put on the list for fall foliage. The balloon flower covers both, but what are some of the others?
Okay. Another one that I like, many people think of ornamental grasses in the fall, and of course they are great in the fall with their silvery plumes, but most of them sort of just turn kind of brown. And although brown can be a lovely fall color.
we'll call it golden.
Golden. Okay. All right. Golden. one that I think really stands out is the Miscanthus purpurescens, or a purple flame grass. And that's a very apt name, particularly if you have a sunny day now and the sun is coming through the grass. It looks like it's a fire with purplish red overtones.
Oh, lovely. So that might be something you'd want to put on the western side of your property, so maybe the sunset would light it up every night?
Yeah, either west or east, because early morning sun makes it look great, too.
All right. Let's talk about a couple more on that list.
Okay. Another one I really like is one that people probably aren't real familiar with. It's called Mucdenia, crimson fans. And that's the common name, too, is Mucdenia. It's a close relative of Bergenia, which many people may have heard of. Bergenia, sometimes heartleaf Bergenia or pig squeak, another great common name. It's got the, as you might guess with the common name of crimson fans, it has sort of mapley shaped leaves that get a nice deep red overtone to them here in the fall.
Oh, wow. We've got time for probably two more.
Okay, let's go with the Euphorbia polychroma, or cushion spurge. This is actually a relative of the poinsettia. And so once you know that, it makes sense that in the fall, it starts turning gold and then eventually more of a red, deep red color. So it takes on some of the, again, red and gold cyclone colors with this cushion spurge.
And you said it's a relative of
the poinsettia.
Of the poinsettia, it actually can live here.
It is hardy here.
All right, yes, so a little lower maintenance than the poinsettia.
A lot lower maintenance, yes.
All right, and one more.
One more. Let's go with the Ceratostigma plumbaginoides. That's a real mouthful, commonly called plumbago. I love that one because it still has deep blue flowers right now, and then the foliage starts turning red-orange. So you got red and orange and blue all together on a ground cover plant.
Oh, lovely. Well, so many of these, and I don't pretend to be a gardening expert, but I have only heard of maybe two of these, Denny. So, I mean, are these things that you'll commonly find in gardens, or are some of these pretty obscure?
I would say probably 75% of them are pretty common. 25% you may have to search a bit more for. A few of them are native plants. You have to do a little bit of searching, but I think it's worthwhile of finding them.
All right. And again, Denny came up with a list of 20 perennial flowers for fall color, and then he came up with 11 more perennials with fall foliage color. And we will put those lists up on our webpage, iowapublicradio.org. And it's worth your time to search for images of these beautiful, beautiful plants as well. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Denny Schrock, Master Gardener Coordinator. And coming up in just a moment, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here. They are here to answer your questions. You can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today with me, Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock, and also with us now, horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And I want to start with this question, which is one I've been wondering about, too, although in another form. This one's from Eric. He says, with all the warm weather, our very young lilac bushes are starting to bud, as well as several of our flowers. Peonies are sprouting up from the ground. Should we be alarmed? Is there anything we should be doing at this point? And I saw violets growing the other day, Richard. So what's going on?
I have a lilac in my yard. It's blooming right now. And it's basically the weather kind of plays a trick. The flower buds on your woody plants, they typically form in mid to late summer, and ideally they stay dormant till spring, but sometimes the weather is such that they get fooled and they break bud and they bloom early, so that does happen. It's most common on some of the magnolias, like the saucer magnolia, where you have a few blooms in late summer, so it's something that we do see on occasion, basically weather-related.
If your lilacs bloom now, does that mean they'll bloom less in the spring?
Absolutely, yes.
All right, they're using that up.
Right.
But enjoy them, right?
Yes. Unusual.
Yeah. All right. You can join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Larry is on the line from Marion. Hi, Larry.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I have questions about a couple of things in my landscaping. Number one, ornamental grasses. I've had fairly good success with some of them, but my hardy pampas grass, I'm really having problem. It died out. I bought a new one, planted it last year. This year it came very sporadically. I usually put a handful of urea fertilizer on it, on those grasses in the spring, along with a little bit of 410-3 fertilizer. My question is, what can I do to get that pampas grass that's supposed to grow about 10 or 12 feet tall to do better? Should I be splitting those every couple of years?
Well, the common name is kind of confusing. I'm not sure exactly which species that is. True pampas grass is not hardy in Iowa. It's a southern type grass. And so there are a couple of plants that kind of go by the common name of pampas grass. So I'm not sure exactly which one you have.
I took that off of the tag,
right?
You know, from when I bought it.
Do you recall the scientific name at all on that?
I don't have, no.
Okay.
I'm wondering or guessing, since he says it's at least 10 or 12 feet tall, it's probably one of the Aranthus.
I would guess that too.
So that one should be hardy here, but yeah, oftentimes people go for pampas grass and it's not actually hardy, but, Aranthus is one that, yes, if it's starting to die out, it may benefit from being divided. It, too, is somewhat at its northern range in Iowa. And so some of the last winters we've had over the last few years, we've had a lot of die out on a lot of things. Even other miscanthus or hardy grasses have had a lot of die out just because they're warm season grasses. And if they keep growing late into the fall, we get a sudden drop in temperature, you might have some die back.
Especially the winter of 2013-2014. That was a brutal winter. We had very cold soil temperatures, much colder than normal, and we saw a lot of dieback on some of the ornamental grasses and some of the other perennials. So even though they're typically reliably hardy, sometimes when you have unusual weather events, they can suffer.
Can I mulch them before winter?
Yeah, certainly putting a layer of mulch. You want to wait till the ground begins to freeze up. You want some cold over the roots there. But usually by about mid-November or so, we start getting some frost going into the ground. And at that point, you can put in, you know, a 6-inch layer of mulch or something, and that would help prevent the frost from going deeper right at that point.
And what should I use for mulch?
Well, you want something that's light and fluffy, whatever you've got available to you, whether it be, you know, something like wood chips that won't mat down, straw or hay. One problem with most leaves is that they do tend to mat down. So leaves usually don't make a great mulch around perennials because they'll tend to smother the ground out.
Okay. So regular landscaping mulch would work, or you're saying it may be better if I go get some straw?
Not necessarily. Straws will certainly work well, but if you're using landscape mulch in the bed already, just piling some extra around it would be a great thing to do, and then you can pull it away in the springtime and let the plant start growing.
Okay. Also, my daylilies. After they bloom the first time in the spring, then I get some, you know, and I deadhead them. Then I get some blooms that come back on even up through now, but they don't usually go to blossom.
So they form buds, but they don't bloom. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's unusual.
Yeah, the first time they do. And from the tag, it's called a Hermocolis stella de oreo daylily.
Right. Well, that's a very, very common cultivar, has kind of a golden flower, repeat bloomer. Do you see any damage to the buds as far as holes or spots or anything of that nature? Because,
no, not really.
Okay, because typically they would go ahead and bloom, and I'm not sure why they wouldn't.
Yeah, they don't seem to be after that first flush.
But no visible damage to the actual bud that you can see.
I have
see.
Not noticed any, okay. No. But I'll try to look more closely.
Okay.
My next question, and that's it.
Yeah, quickly, Larry.
On my black-eyed Susans, they are really spreading. How can I get those to, you know, not spread so much in my landscaping?
Well, they do spread from seed, and one way to stop that is to deadhead them. As soon as they're done blooming, go ahead and clip off that spent flower. That's one good way.
They also do spread from rhizomes that make a bigger clump, but the way to do that, you're just going to have to dig up around the edge of the clump and pull out some of the rhizomes so they don't spread any further.
All right, Larry, thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Ralph is up next in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Say, I noticed that the jack and the pulpits in the fall have a really nice seed head. What else could we plant that's edible? I noticed that the several pear trees have a nice yellow with a red blush on them, and I think that's kind of eye candy for those of us that love pears. Any other suggestions for people on edible stuff that we could plant for the following year?
All right. Beautiful edible stuff.
Okay. Now, as far as a plant, a blueberry plant is a nice ornamental in that in the fall of the year, the leaves turn a nice color as far as it varies from yellow to orange to kind of reddish purple. So you have this plant that produces an edible crop basically in summer, and then it has very nice fall foliage.
All right. Any other ideas?
Another one, and some people may question whether it's truly edible or not, would be the black chokeberry, Aronia. Of course, it's a health food right now, but it's very astringent as far as a fruit goes. But it gets very nice reddish fall color as well.
All right. So a couple good suggestions for you there, Ralph. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Mildred is up next in Wesley. Hi, Mildred.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, over the last couple of years, I've planted several shrubs and bushes that are now in the wrong place. And I was wondering if I could move them now or have to wait till spring.
Well, I would typically wait till spring. And I would do it early in the spring before they begin to leaf out. You can move them in the fall once they drop their leaves. But because you're doing it in the fall and you're entering the plant, they may not survive the winter as well. So if you let them get through the winter first and then move them, that typically works best.
Okay, good. And then I want to know, we cut down a tree, and so I have sawdust and wood chips from that. And could I put that around some of these small shrubs and stuff that I have to keep the weeds from growing and kind of for...
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely. Sure, you can. That it helps to conserve moisture, keeps the weeds out, keeps away the lawnmower, the weed whip, that type of thing. So, yes, absolutely.
And how deep should I put it?
Typically 3 to 4 inches would be good.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Mildred. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me today, Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension and Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. And up next, we've got Nick on the line in Fort Dodge. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Yes, I have a horse pasture that is fairly abused, and what I've been doing is using a plug aerator in the spring and the fall and then overseeding grass. And my question was, is that a good schedule for aeration, and when would be the best time to overseed?
Well, as far as pasture, it's a little bit out of our area. As far as turf grass, we typically like to overseed in late summer, sometime around mid-August to mid-September. At this point, it's a little bit late. I would think at this point your chance of success would be fairly poor. But typically the best time as far as grass seed is typically mid-August to mid-September.
Okay.
All right. Does that help you out, Nick?
And what about the aeration? Is that something you can do too much of? Because I'm worried about compaction, obviously.
It shouldn't be. Typically when you aerate as far as a lawn, the best device to use is a core aerator that pulls out plugs. So you're actually pulling out plugs, and that helps to relieve the compaction. So it shouldn't cause compaction, but relieve it.
All right, Nick, thanks a lot for your call. And here's a question from Ryan in Van Meter. I planted a chinkapin oak in May, but I think the site is just a bit too wet for it. I'd like to replace it with a swamp white oak. Can I move the chinkapin oak now?
Well, basically the same answer we gave just a couple minutes ago is that it is possible to move things in the fall once they've dropped their leaves, but generally you have better luck if you wait until late winter, early spring before growth starts, simply because the roots don't get completely reestablished before winter sets in.
Okay, and the fact that this is just recently planted should make it possible to dig it up.
Yes, yes, it should. The roots shouldn't have expanded that much this year.
All right, here's a question from Betty. When is the best time to plant the fall color perennials you were talking about earlier in the program, Denny?
Well, a good rule of thumb on planting perennials is if they bloom in the fall, plant them in the spring. Vice versa, if they bloom in the spring, you can plant them in the fall. So that's why we plant peonies and iris in the fall. So most all of these would be great to plant in the spring.
All right. Let's go back to the phones, 866-780-9100. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got Judge Brown on the line from Fort Dodge. Hi.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, my question is, what can I do about the wasps and other insects that have been eating my Concord grapes and my apples? They have virtually destroyed the crop pretty much this year. Is there sprays or something I can use to ward them off?
Well, I think typically the best thing to do is try to keep the garden clean. I say that because if you have damaged fruit or rotting fruit, whether it's grapes or raspberries or whatever it might be, that tends to attract the insects to the area, and that only attracts more and more of the insects. So I think the best way is to keep the garden clean, especially in late summer, early fall.
All right. Well, thank you.
You might also be able to, if the plant's small enough, like a grape, you may be able to put fine netting over it so that they can't actually get to the fruit. Probably a little more difficult to do with an apple tree, but you might be able to keep them out that way as well.
All right. Judge Brown, thanks a lot for your call. There's nothing more frustrating than growing something almost to harvest point and then losing it. All right. John is on the line next in Beaverdale. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm running late. A lot of my fall things are actually just late on everything. And I wondered if it was, I usually think of transplanting or replanting bearded iris late summer, early fall. And I wondered if, you know, due to the nice weather we've had, is it too late?
Well, bearded iris is such a tough, resilient plant. You can do that still yet at this point. I would say the prime time typically is like July and August. But again, it's such a tough, resilient plant. You can still do it, yes.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I hope you catch up on other stuff too, John.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ann is on the line next in Newton. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Two-part question. We have Creeping Charlie in our front yard, and my husband was listening to the program in the spring, and it was suggested that we wait until the fall to get rid of it. We're wondering, A, what we can use to get rid of the Creeping Charlie. Is there something that's more natural, a product that we can use that's more natural so we don't hurt, you know, the plants or the wildlife or anything? Second, once we get rid of this Creeping Charlie, which we will do, we're bound to determine, what process should we do to reseed and get grass back?
Okay. What is the situation? Is it mainly just Creeping Charlie, or is there quite a bit of grass in the area, too?
It's primarily, we have two sides to our lawn, and I have cut back these dogwoods. It's a 150-year-old home, and the lawn is 150 years old, and it was the dogwoods were very overgrown when we bought the home, and so when I cut them back, there was, oh, I don't know, 3 or 4 foot swatch wide of Creeping Charlie that goes all the way the length of the yard.
Okay. The reason I asked would be, for example, if the area is essentially weeds and you have very little grass, I would just destroy the entire area and start over. Okay.
Yeah. No,
And you could do that by tillage, placing a tarp over it. You could use a herbicide like Roundup and just destroy everything and start over. But if you have a pretty good stand of grass infested with Creeping Charlie, then I would use a herbicide, and specifically one that contains either 2,4-D or triclopyr, T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, and you need to apply it twice. And typically we put it on sometime the first time in late September, early October, and a second time a month later. So the key is to put it on real quickly at this point and then come back in early November with a second application.
And where does one obtain triclosphere?
Well, they're pretty common compounds in your broadleaf herbicides. If you go to the garden center, most of the broadleaf herbicide sprays, they typically have like two or three different compounds in them. And if you read the label, you can see that. 2,4-D is very common. Triclopyr is fairly common, too. There is one specific product that contains that, and that's Ortho Weed Be Gone, Chickweed, Clover, and Oxalis Killer, strictly triclopyr. Very common product.
All right, Ann, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in a moment. You can call us, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension and Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock. They are here to answer your questions. That phone number one more time, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Here with me this hour, Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock and Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. They are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Deborah is on the line next. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I wanted to know, he was talking about the grasses earlier with this gentleman. So what are the tall grasses that are good for Iowa?
Well, when you say tall, one very tall one is giant miscanthus. That grows about maybe 8 to 12 feet tall. Tends to be fairly upright, very dense. Makes a nice screen if you want it, but it's a very tall grass.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. And then what about those, I think they call them zebra grass. Are they, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes. Zebra grass or porcupine grass, the ones that have sort of the stripy foliage, horizontal stripes. Yeah, those are good for Iowa as well, very hardy. They're not quite as tall as that, but they do tend to get somewhere about 6 or 7 feet tall usually. So they'll make a pretty good screen as well.
Okay, great. Just one other question. The zinnias, my neighbor has some beautiful zinnias, and she said I could pick the seeds. So, you know, it's kind of a big bud after the leaves fall off.
Right. So, yeah.
How would I keep those good till spring?
All right. So, yes, you certainly can start zinnias from seed that you save from this year's flowers. Now, need to be aware that if they were hybrid zinnias, the offspring that come next year will not necessarily be real uniform, but you can have a broad array of flower colors and types and so on. But a lot of people like that variety. So what you do is you harvest them, let them dry down. The seeds are going to be in that head. You can kind of pull it apart and get rid of the chaff that's around it and then just save the seeds. I like to overwinter seeds by putting them in an airtight container like Tupperware or a canning jar, and then I keep them in the refrigerator because cool dry is the best way to store seeds. So that's a real good way to keep them cool and dry.
All right, Deborah, good luck with that. Thank you so much for your call. Next up, let's go to Joe in Victor. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
What's the new kind of pears to plant since the old pear trees are going over the hill?
Right, any new pear hybrids? That's what you're looking for?
Right.
Richard?
Summer Crisp, I think, is a fairly new one from Minnesota. That you'll see in some of the catalogs and nurseries. Denny?
I mean, is he looking for fruiting pears or the ornamental pears? That's what
Joe,
I was saying.
Fruiting pears or ornamental?
Fruiting pears. I have old variety of pears I'll be selling in Iowa City at the farmer's market. So I put my 2 cents in for the farmer's market in Iowa City.
All right, but you're looking for new hybrids?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I don't think there's as many as there are as apples. I mean, apples, there are new varieties all the time, not so much with the pears. So they kind of stick with the standards.
All right. Well, you find something that works, you'll have to tell us, Joe. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Mark in Des Moines. Hello, Mark.
Hi. This is kind of a follow-up question to the gal that just called in about the crabgrass in the yard. I've been using 2,4-D. It's making some progress. Just had the lawn aerated yesterday, and I was considering applying another coat of the 2,4-D, and I was going to put down fertilizer and grass seed before the winter. Was wondering if that's a good idea or if I should just do the grass seed, or if I apply the 2,4-D, how long I should wait to put grass seed down.
Well, as far as the grass seed, it's basically a little bit too late. At this point, it takes a while for that grass seed to germinate and for the seedlings to get established. So sowing grass seed at this point probably is not going to work. So I would probably forget that for this year. You can put on a broadleaf herbicide again if you wish. I'd probably do that probably toward the beginning of November if you want to wait.
All right. And then should he try to seed in the spring? Or I know that that's not the ideal time.
The problem with spring is that we tend to get a lot of weed seed germination. So they can try it in the spring. But if it's okay, I'd probably wait till next summer, late in the summer, and do it around mid to late August.
And my question was, he mentioned crabgrass, which the broadleaf herbicide won't do anything for crabgrass if that indeed is his problem. It will take care of broadleaf weeds like the creeping Charlie or dandelions and things like that. But for crabgrass, he'd want to put down a pre-emergent herbicide in the springtime to prevent that crabgrass from germinating next year.
Yeah,
All right.
The crabgrass is an annual grass, so it's going to basically bite the dust in a few weeks when we have a hard freeze. So.
All right. Which it's hard to imagine that with all the warm weather we've been having, but I know it's coming.
It's going to happen.
Yep. It always does. Mark, thanks for your call. Here's a question from John. What trees create a nice fencing or privacy around a property?
What trees? Probably an evergreen would be the best because that would be effective year-round. And so I would look at things like maybe a white pine if you have a lot of space or a Norway spruce. If you don't have a lot of space, then a columnar arborvitae would be good.
All right. And if would you want to look into things that people use for windbreaks? I mean, it seems like that would be a definite overlap.
Right. The Norway spruce, the white pine, they do a very good job. They're very reliable, dependable.
All right.
Some of the upright junipers will create a good privacy in a fairly limited space, too.
All right. And here's a question from Kelsey on Twitter. We've had a version of this question already this hour, but Denny, I'm sure you can repeat yourself. When is the best time to plant the blanket flower?
All right. Actually, Gaillardia or blanket flower is one that blooms all season long. But it really is usually planted in the springtime, too, because it's a warm season plant.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jane is on the line in Ames. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering, in this last spring, I planted a crimson maple, and it's doing very well. But I'm wondering, do I need to deep water that for the winter? We've had so much moisture this summertime. Would it be important to deep water that for the winter so it, you know, doesn't go away from or die over the, you know?
We've had more than plenty of water this spring and summer, but it has been dry recently, so I think I'd probably go out with the hose if it stays dry and maybe water it again maybe 2 or 3 times yet this fall. And you could do it maybe this weekend, maybe do it again in late October, then maybe in early November.
Okay. And would that be important for other trees, too? I have some that are about 5 or 6 years old. Should I do that?
No, they should.
I notice the grass around them is really dry.
No, they should be okay. They should be fine.
Okay.
The younger trees have a much smaller root system, and so they would appreciate the water. The established trees, they should be fine.
Okay. Thank
All right. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 866-780-9100. Martha is up next from Des Moines. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, about a week ago, my husband and I replanted two espaliered pear trees. And it went well. And then last night, I was watering them, and I left the hose on all night. Not a lot, but I'm wondering if I just drowned them.
No, you basically didn't. You wasted water, but you didn't drown them. So
that's good news,
water,
right?
Yeah.
You basically overwater when you water too often. If you water really heavily once, it's not a problem. You just wasted water. So it should be fine.
But should I water them? So they're probably good till the snow comes, or should I?
No, they're probably good for a couple of weeks. But okay. I would say in a couple of weeks, if it hasn't rained, I'd water them again.
But don't do it all night this time.
Right.
Yeah, right. All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye. Martha, thanks a lot for your call. And we were talking about different pear hybrids earlier. I got a message from Joe McNally at the Iowa Arboretum in Madrid. He says that they have summer crisp and patent pears available for planting this fall. So just an FYI. And let's go back to the phones. Brian is on the line in Muscatine. Hi, Brian.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm a farmer, and I'm out in my field right now combining soybeans.
All right, good luck today.
However, I do have an organic garden, and I find it's really, really hard to keep the weeds out of it. So I've gone to plastic mulch with sub-plastic sheet irrigation, but that's a pain because you got to always watch the watering. So I want to go to water-permeable plastic mulch that is heavy duty, like you would see around bushes in commercial applications. It's like a mesh, but it's very thick, and weeds can't come up through it. Now, my question is, since I have an organic garden, is that like making my garden not organic? Are these plants possibly picking up something from that plastic?
There shouldn't be any leachate from plastic. I assume what you're talking about is something like a landscape fabric, essentially.
Yeah.
Heavy
duty, multiple year.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there may be a tiny, tiny amount of something adhering to the surface, but I don't know if there's any regulations as far as organics go, as far as use of materials like that or not. You obviously need to make sure you're following the guidelines, but there shouldn't be any measurable leachate from that.
Do plants take up any sort of plastic particles, like maybe animals would, or plants don't take up little micro particles of plastic?
Yeah, I wouldn't think they would. Those are not compounds they would normally absorb, no.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And just a plug, in 2 weeks on Horticulture Day, on October 30th, we will have our organic expert Kathleen Dellett on the show. So if you have any specific organic questions, you can save them up for that day. And next up, Nora's on the line in Mason City. Hi, Nora.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have two questions. One is, I have a parking strip that gets a lot of salt, and there's nothing I can do that makes it look good. So I was hoping you could pinpoint a low-growing, salt-resistant ground cover.
I have my whole parking strip planted with lots of things, but something like some of the sedums make a great ground cover in that type of area. They're like Sedum sarmentosum is one that spreads pretty readily. Sedum requinii is one I've got in that sort of situation, and they tend to take the salt a little bit, but what you may need to do is try to leach that salt out of there too. So yes, salt gets thrown up there, but try to really wash that salt away every year so that it doesn't destroy the soil structure there,
right,
too.
As soon as that ground thaws out in the spring, go out there and really flush it. Water it heavily and get rid of some of that salt.
Okay, that's helpful to know. And then I got some dirt from just from a dig-up, and put it around my house, and it turns out it's heavy clay. And it's been kind of a hassle, and none of my plants are doing very well. Is there something I can do to rescue them?
Well, you may have to maybe in the spring maybe dig them up and set them aside and maybe work in some organic matter like compost or shredded leaves or something of that nature. So you may have to dig them up and kind of redo it, possibly.
All right. Nora, thanks a lot for your call. Here's a question from Carol. In the past summer, my 15 tomato plants developed brown spots encircled by a yellow circle on the leaves, starting at the base and moving up the plant. I treated it weekly with a copper solution, but it didn't help very much. The plants did not produce particularly well, and some were misshapen and had some spots as well. What could be done to prevent this next year?
Right. We had a very wet year as far as weather-wise, spring and summer. And those conditions are ideal for foliar pathogens, so we saw a lot of those things. Basically, cleaning up that dead debris this fall, getting rid of it and destroying it, and then next spring, finding a different location where tomatoes had not been grown for at least 2 or 3 years. So that's the best way. Rotate.
All right. Next up, we've got Jim on the line in Grinnell with a question that's also related to an email. This is from Cindy in Ames, saying anyone wanting to plant miscanthus, especially in a rural area, should know that some kinds are invasive. And Jim, I know you have a related question, so we'll let Denny and Richard tackle both of those at the same time. Jim, what's your question?
My question is, I realize that all these ornamental grasses, they're being planted in lots of places lately in Iowa, are wind pollinated. So they go to seed and birds eat them and spread them around. What assurance do we have that these won't become the next really dangerous invasive species in our state?
All right, Jim and Denny and Richard. I know that's a concern that a lot
right,
of people have.
Right, and some universities like Minnesota have been doing some studies on this. And most of the ornamental grasses are not invasive as far as what they found. There are certain types of miscanthus that can be. And the one that we see commonly in the ditches is actually not commonly sold. It's a very specific species. And definitely do not dig that up and transplant it. It's a very, very invasive plant. So there has been some research done on it.
All right. And do a little bit of homework before you plant.
Right.
Denny, you want to add anything?
I was just going to say that, yes, a lot of the planted cultivars either mature so late in the season that they do not mature their seed, and so that's why they don't spread, or they're actually sterile and will not seed through. So a lot of them you can plant with good conscience.
All right. Let's try. Well, actually, I guess we're pretty much out of time. Here's another question from Twitter. Any tips for keeping squirrels from digging up my bulbs?
Probably the best thing to do is once they're planted, let's say you're planting some tulips or daffodils. Once they're planted, go ahead and water them in. And then if you have some hardware cloth or chicken wire fencing, cover the area with that. Put on some bricks to hold it down. Leave it in place till spring and you're in good shape.
All right. And we're going to have another beautiful weekend. Great weather
yes.
to get outside in. Anything we should be thinking about making sure we're doing in the garden to get ready for winter, even though it feels far away?
I think just enjoying the weather, actually, just getting out there and looking around and doing a few things.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Denny Schrock, thank you.
Great to be here, Charity.
Master Gardener Coordinator Denny Schrock, and again, his list of 20 perennial flowers for fall color and 11 perennials with fall foliage color will be up on our website, iowapublicradio.org, later today, just in case you didn't get them all written down quickly enough. And of course, we'll be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. We have production assistance from Patrick Linane, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Have a great weekend.